the 16th annual Santa Fe International Folk Art Market begins tonight. It will feature more than 150 master artists from 50 countries. I'm Megan Kamrick, and over the next half hour, we'll meet some of the artists at this year's market. You can see photos of them and their work at KUNM.org. As of 2018, the folk art market generated more than $31 million in earnings for artists. That can have a tremendous impact, especially for artists from developing countries. Those earnings often support families and build infrastructure for entire communities. There will be 45 new artists at the market this year. Among them is the Kitengela Women Omakau Cooperative from Kenya. Phoebe Lasoy is a member of the cooperative and says the beadwork they will sell at the market is an integral part of the cultural traditions and daily lives of the Maasai people.
Women used to do to keep themselves busy. You know, they just, in the morning, once they have attended their cattle, their kids, and they will not have any other thing to do. So the next thing they do will be beading. And that led to income, to a source of income. Because during that time, there were Europeans around, so they will exchange. They'll get food, and then they'll give out beads.
What are the beads made of?
Then used to be shell, sticks, grass, dry grass, plastics. But now you can see they're made of fine glass.
Do you actually make the beads or do you import the beads?
We import. Okay. And that is an unfortunate thing. We should be also be the one to produce.
Is that a hope to be able to do that?
Hopefully, but you know, Maasai people, okay, Maasai ladies, they're still seen as primitive people in the society. They do not have a say because a man can decide to sell a cow and do whatever they want to do, but they can't give them that money to start a business. So it is a challenge.
Is the beading cooperative helping women to earn income and
Definitely.
Have some of that?
Because, you know, we are a group of women. We come up and make our beads. We design our items. We make them, whatever the kind of beads design we want to. Then we will post on our Facebook. We will share. Then we'll sell. Before, we used to give little gifts so that we can at least be able to raise awareness. Yeah. But now we're making good money. And hopefully, we will be able to raise more money for betterment of ourselves. Because as for now, at least we are able to provide for our kids. We are able to have good houses. We are able to dress well. And we will look good. We don't depend on men 100% like before.
Where do the designs come from? Are they traditional or does everyone have their own?
It's both innovative and traditional. You have to challenge yourself. You can't be doing the same thing. If you continue, definitely, if you wake up every day, you do the same thing, it will get monotonous.
When you're wearing the beads and the jewelry, is it all the time or is it for specific traditional or cultural reasons or both?
You can decide to put whatever, but not all. I can decide to put a choker anytime I feel like, or a band, wristbands, anytime I feel like. But those one doesn't have any definition. But if I told I have to put on my crown, we call it Ngishili. That one means that you're either a bride or you're attending a function or a very important function. Actually, it's a bride who is supposed to put on that, or the mother to the bride during her wedding. If I have to put on the other things we call Imboro, that means that it is a special occasion. Maybe our chief is being inaugurated, and that is the time that we have to go and put that Imboro on him.
Do the colors also have meaning?
Definitely.
Oh, tell me about that.
We have orange and yellow. Those ones represent hospitality. They are very lovely people, very welcoming. Also, it is associated with our cattle. We have a gourd, and it is orangish in color. That gourd, we keep our milk in. We don't have fridge, so that is our fridge. Yes, and then for the yellow one, it's the hide of the cow. So that is the one we use as a mattress. So if you're a visitor, when you come to a place, I don't have a mattress, but I'll give you a skin of a cow to sleep on, but very soft leather. Yeah. And then we have blue. We have different shades of blue, but we just call them blue. Those are represent the skies or the water that our cattle drink. And then we have the white milk. Yes, and we have red, bravery, and strong. Yes, and then black is the color of people, the kind of hardship they go through. Yes, so that is it. Those are our main colors. We have only 7 main colors.
That's beautiful. Well, there's a story in every piece.
Yeah.
How long has the cooperative been in existence?
Around 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And why did you decide to form or to be part of forming it?
2 heads are better than 1. Your idea, combined with my idea, will make our society big and large. Because at the end of the day, we meet, we discuss, and other than just bidding, we have to get some little money we put aside from that bidding, and then we'll be able to develop ourselves. Maybe we can even buy a piece of land somewhere for our development. That is our prayer.
So this is your first year at the market.
Yes.
Why did you want to come to the Santa Fe Folk Art Market?
First, exposure, because I'm very sure there will be so much challenge. And then once I got there, we will be able to raise money for us to even increase more sales and get more orders to take to different countries. Yes.
What does the community use the money for that you're making?
Mainly is kids' school fees.
Is it schooling for girls? Is that something that you focus on?
Oh, my God. That is a big yes. When you educate a girl, you educate a whole community. The moment you go to school, you'll know you are right. Nobody will force you to get married to a person you don't want, to any person you feel like. Because someone, you know, then we didn't have a say. How I wish we can even have big forums to talk to our girls and encourage them to continue with education. There should be people who are able to get to work for themselves.
Phoebe Lasoy is a member of the Kitengela Women Omakau Cooperative in Kenya. They're attending the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market for the first time this year under the auspices of Acacia Moyo. That's a nonprofit that works alongside the Kitengela community to develop income-producing activities to prevent the sale of land, which is so important to Maasai culture. The market begins tonight and runs through Sunday on Museum Hill. Find out more at KUNM.org. Porfirio Gutierrez returns to the market this year. He comes from a long line of Zapotec weavers in Mexico. He's working to preserve that ancient tradition, and one way he does that is by using natural dyes rather than synthetic dyes many weavers now employ.
Textiles and the weaving practice in our community, it's like our language. It's not only an art form, but it's also storytelling through the symbolic elements. Some of the traditional designs, that Ojo de Dios, Cycle of Life, butterflies, and so forth. So a lot of my designs narrate the ceremonies that involves corn, that involves blessings, light, and so forth.
You worked in the U.S. for a number of years, and then
yes,
you came back home and you engaged again with weaving and sort of had a new appreciation for it. Why did you want to return to those traditions?
In our family, we believe that each family member has a gift or a calling, if you may. And I think that's what happened to me. I think the ancestors has elected me, or the greater being has given a gift that I later on in life I got to discover. Growing up in a community, cultural, in this case, the weaving tradition, you do the weaving because that's what you know how to do. I do the weaving now because I choose to weave. There's a difference there.
You're using natural dyes,
mm-hmm,
rather than chemical dyes. Why did you decide to focus on that?
My parents would tell us that Mother Earth, it's a living being. And the plants that the colors come from or the food we eat are also alive. That resonates to me, and much later on in life I begin, even today I continue to understand deeply the philosophy and the worldview of the Zapotec people. To me, that those are essential. To me, that's part of my cultural values. And with not that part, it will be just a product. I don't refer to my work as rug. I think rug diminishes the work that we do. the work that we do, it's a tangible history and traditional knowledge that has been endured for thousands of years in our land. We weave art. One of the plants that we use, that it's medicine, and also for the yellow dye, it's called pericón. That is one of the basic colors, along, of course, with cochineal insect. That cochineal insect is such an important element in our culture that dates back thousands and thousands of years ago for the red colors, as well as anil or indigo.
You've been coming to the market for a few years. What kind of impact has that had on keeping this tradition alive and creating a sustainable living for you and your community?
Well, first of all, the folk art market, it's a blessing to many of us. It gives us the respect that the makers has been lacking, if that's the word to use, in many ways, even in our own country. And that's extremely important. That gives us a sense of self-confidence of being here and being recognized by such an important organization, as well as the economic opportunity, which I said, with not these economic opportunity, these traditions and many of the traditions from around the world would definitely disappear.
You're doing traditional designs, but you're also innovating on traditional designs. How are you doing that? What does that look like?
I understand that the work that we create, you could, as an artist, could express your concerns and your worldview of the contemporary Zapotec. And that's what I've done. You know, we continue to obviously create traditional work because the only way to keep it alive is to actually do it. Some body of work that I create, it's called rituals. It's a body of work that pays homage to the use in the ceremony in everyday life, a mat that's called petante, that is made or woven traditionally by with a palm leaf. So it's kind of like a basket weaving technique that has been used for thousands of years in my culture. So in the older days, you weren't not only born in these petante, but we spend our lifetime using it in everyday life or ceremony. And at the end of your journey here in this world, your body would get wrapped around and used as a shroud. So I've created work that pays homage to that and did an installation at the Textile Museum in Oaxaca City, which part of this artwork, it's also being acquired by the Smithsonian to be in their collection. So to me, it brings great joy for people to pay attention to what I do as an artist.
When you've gone back from the market every year and bring the money that you've made selling you and your family's designs, what do you do with the funds when you're back in your community?
Well, the first thing that we want to secure is material. One of the projects is acquiring a piece of land for us to grow our own dye stuff and also traditional medicine. That's very important. So this site will be used for education, not only for our families, but also for the community. Hopefully the young people would be interested to come and see what we do, as well as hopefully within the next few years, a creative space and retreat center.
You have big plans.
You have to. I think if you don't have, in my case, I have to continue to dream and to continue to push myself. But at the end of the day, it's about preservation. In the world to know that there still exist as families in Oaxaca that still uses natural dye. We are about 7,000 population in my community. And I'll probably say about 80% are involved in some ways with weaving, but only about a dozen families still use and preserve the traditional knowledge of natural dye.
So you hope to expand that?
I think by bringing awareness to the world, there will be an interest and people would come and expecting to get a natural dye piece.
That was Porfirio Gutierrez. He's a Zapotec weaver from Mexico. He'll be at the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market, which begins tonight and runs through Sunday on Museum Hill. Find out more at KUNM.org. In India, a social enterprise has also turned to natural dyes. Adiv Pure Nature uses flowers and other organic material to make natural dyed fabrics for scarves, garments, and jewelry. It provides jobs for people facing challenges in Mumbai, and also helps reduce pollution from flowers used for prayers in temples, then cast into waterways. Rupa Trivedi is the founder of Adiv.
We have millions of temples and an enormous amount of flowers that go to the gods every day. So that is when it got me thinking that if I could recycle that and reuse those. So I do the dyeing, and then we recycle the whole thing and put it back to composting.
What kinds of flowers are these usually?
The temple flowers that I collect is marigold, rose, and hibiscus. But there are many other flowers that are offered in many other temples all around. Marigold primarily is the main flower.
Isn't that interesting, because that's such an important flower in South America and in Mexico. So I gather the Portuguese brought Oaxaca. It to India.
Yep, Oaxaca. Oaxaca is where marigold has originated from. And I initially did some research to know marigold could be dyed. And I really, that's when I, then it struck me that I should do that as my project.
And what kinds of colors are they producing?
The colors that I get are myriad. So we have yellow, which is primarily the color of marigold, but I can get a beautiful military green, olive. I can get very brilliant red when I mix it with madder. So complex dyes, shades that we create out of marigold and other dye.
I understand you also use onions, coconut husks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Onion is my favorite, because I collect the onion skins from the farmer's market. So every Sunday, the farmer's market that is held near my house, I go and collect all their onion skins from them.
What kind of color do they make?
Onion can make very beautiful yellow, very different, very golden yellow, and also olive.
You built the business in a poorer part of Mumbai, and you employ people who have struggled to find jobs. Tell me about some of the people you employ.
I think at Adiv, we have attracted various kinds of energies, and the dyeing team is mainly of women. Women who would have otherwise had no employment, and they don't have any particular skill that would give them high-end jobs. So in Adiv, they find their home for creativity, and they are amazing artists.
There's one I saw mentioned, Tabusum.
Well, Tabusum's story is a very interesting one. She was married at a very young age, and she was divorced, and her husband threw her out overnight. So she was the daughter of one of the embroiderers I knew, and her father brought her to me saying that she is very depressed. She was young. I think she must have been barely 20. She had two children by then already, one son who was 2 and the other who was 4. She would just burst out into tears. No skills, no nothing. She just came to sit by me, so that, you know, her father thought that maybe she's amongst women who are working and who are doing things, she might forget and, you know, get on with her life. Well, she could not really do so in the beginning. And people can be pretty ruthless, you know. They are all survivors, so they need you to survive in a rough way. They really made fun of her, and she would be crying all the time. However, around that time, she fell very ill. You will not believe it. All the same people who were making fun of her went to her home every day, brought her to the office every day, and fed her food, gave her medicines, and took care of her. Since then, she has become an integral part of my dye team, and she is today one of the masters of dyeing.
Was that your vision when you started the company, to make opportunities like that?
Yes, that was my vision. I mean, when I started the company, I probably did not know what was I going to be. I only knew that I had this vision that I wanted to bring in these people, and I wanted to do something with nature. It was just these two things. At that time, I did not know I could be a dyer.
You have about 30 employees now?
Yes.
I believe. How has creating this business helped them?
They have their dignity. They have their self-respect. They are earning their money. There isn't any sympathy to them. That was one of the biggest things that I feel they wanted. All of us, I mean, no one really wants to be a beggar. No one really wants to be at that level where you are going to be sympathetic. I think even today, they do not like if anyone is coming and being overly kind to them. They feel their self-respect.
What has been the impact of coming to the folk art market for your company and for your employees?
Oh, they are... the thing was that in folk art market, what we are creating is for us. Up to now, we create things which are for other design houses or designers. So we work with their inspirations, with their color palette and and work around their creativity. So ours is only the input of doing this work for them. But when we come to folk art here, we sell our own creativity, and it's a matter of pride for everyone. They look forward, they start creating, they start thinking in totally different ways only for the folk art. So that it's their creativity which comes out completely, and they enjoy it. They look forward, they wait for me to give them a blow-by-blow, you know, account of what is going on here, etc.
What about the money that you make here? How does that used when you go back?
It all goes to them. It's a social enterprise. It's my passion, and they are my babies. So it all goes back to them.
What do they use the money for?
They have children. They are taking care of them. I mean, the reason that they have been able to put their children into school is because of this job that they do. And that goes back to that. You know, they take care of their house. They have a better amenities in the house. Maybe they plan out, okay, this time we're going to buy maybe the air con. We might buy it. So it brings a sort of sense of joy in them to think of what they're going to buy.
What does the future hold for your company, for your employees?
I want it to grow, and I actually hope that they can take it over from me. I'm definitely not young, so I want them to take over, and you know, I hope that they can learn business sense to continue. Like I always, this is my favorite line, that they are urban artisans. We are artisans. We are maybe sitting in a city, but we are pure artisans. And not all artisans are good business people. So I'm hoping that together as a team, they can become owners of this company.
That was Rupa Trivedi, founder of Adiv Pure Nature, based in Mumbai. She's among the more than 150 artists at the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market this year, which starts tonight. Find out more at KUNM.org. Rupa Trivedi and Porfirio Gutierrez are also featured in a new book, True Colors, World Masters of Natural Dyes and Pigments. The author is Keith Recker, who is also the creative director of the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market.
I'm very excited to say that the rest of the world seems to be waking up to a higher level of interest in traditional ways of arriving at color. So plant-based dyes, which are so much less polluting than synthetic dyes, are increasingly important. And even I see a dawning of value in the irregularity of plant-based dyes. We don't have to have a whole shelf of green T-shirts that are all exactly the same shade of green. We might actually be happier to have a shelf of T-shirts that are subtly different, each and every one, because the drying process was different, the heat of the dye vat might have been different, the concentration of dye matter in the vessel might have been a little different. That seems to me far more stimulating and human than something that looks like it came out of a replicating machine, as opposed to a situation of making. So I'm happy about all of that. I think that we will see a lot of changes in consumer behavior. I think we want things that don't pollute. We want things that represent positive change. And going back to a language of natural dyes is just part of that broader dialogue.
What was the vision of the market, and how has the world sort of caught up with those ideas?
Well, the vision of the market, I think, had a lot to do with bringing the finest interpreters of folk tradition around the world here to Santa Fe to introduce them to Americans. And one of the reasons that was necessary is that there really wasn't a great venue for folk artists in particular to get out of their villages, to introduce themselves to the broader world. And we needed their warmth, we needed their humor, we needed their expressiveness, we needed to know something about the way they saw the world. And I think that need is really what helped the market kind of take off. Your question is a really good one about how 16 years later has that impulse worked its way into, shall we say, the mainstream. And I think you see this need to connect in a technological world taking all kinds of forms. And one of them is definitely exploring and investing in things you believe in through your giving, through your buying, through your travel. And I think the folk art market was in on that moment of trying to figure out new ways to connect.
Tell me how many applications you're getting every year and how many choose.
All right. There are over 700 applications. The first jury takes that down to about half. This year they took it down to a little less than half. So we had 270 or so move to the second jury. And then the second jury has to take that down to 155.
And what are you looking for?
I would say that we are looking for, above all, aesthetic excellence, fine craftsmanship, something that really offers value for what it is. I think we're also looking for expressions of folk tradition, the old stories, the old beliefs, the old things that people would cherish. And I think I'm very proud to say we're increasingly looking at the voice of the artist. What personal creativity do they bring? What expression do they bring? What storytelling of lives happening now are they engaging in? And I think one of the reasons it's important for us to do that is that half of the phrase folk art is art. And art is alive. And art is made by artists who are engaging with the world in ways that might surprise us, might shock us, might irritate us, might please us, or all of the above. And it's really an act of respect to engage with them at the level of artist.
As you factor in things like that, are you also looking at what could be the impact on this community or this artist by coming to the market?
I am very interested in that. I know a number of the jurors are very interested in that. The power of investing a dollar in a person, in an artist, in a cooperative, the power of that dollar when it goes home is immeasurable. So many things get done. I had this amazing experience years ago interviewing a group of artists in rural Vietnam, making exquisite fabric in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And I asked them what they did with the income that was coming in from this new, really amazing kind of weaving that they were doing. And to a person, they all said, educating the kids, access to medical care, transportation, because they couldn't get to and from market to take care of their needs, and arable land, food security. And over again, you see that the reasons people do this from a social point of view boil down to those things.
What are the most important impacts do you think the folk art market has had?
Well, first, I think we begin with a sense of validation. For a lot of people, attending the procession, for example, gives them such a feeling of standing in the world. And I think that that's not necessarily what they experience all the time back home. So that encouragement to keep on is incredibly important. And then there's the financial aspect. And it seems maybe chilly to talk about money in the context of art. But as we said earlier, these are living artists who have to meet their responsibilities and obligations.
How do you help them, like, basically fairly price their work and understand the value of the work they're putting into something?
Part of the training that happens right before the market is a costing and pricing analysis. And it is kind of amazing. People do tend to understand the amount of money that they pay out for supplies. And they do tend to understand the amount of money it takes them to get to this market. What they don't really understand is the value of their own time. And so to begin to incorporate an hourly wage for themselves and the people who make with them, that's what really starts to lift people out of poverty, right? If you just recoup your expenses, that's not really a take home. That's just barely breaking even. Plus, you've lost your time for having not done other things. So really starting to value the time, and then also over time valuing the skill. So the better you are at what you do, and the more quote-unquote perfect, that's a bad word, but the more perfect you are in what you're bringing, the higher the value of your pieces. And we see people starting to actually realize, wow, not only do I spend 3 months on this, you will never find this anywhere else. So they should get the value that these products represent, and they should take it home and make investments in their lives. And they do.
Keith Recker is creative director of the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market, which kicks off its 16th year tonight through Sunday. Find out more and see photos of the artists and their work at KUNM.org. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening to KUNM.